Hello, this is Ukraine Calling, a weekly roundup of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main story. I'm Bohdan Nahailo, standing in for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here are some of the main stories from Ukraine. Well, judicial reform is set to move forward because a new law came into force on the 30th of September that moves the whole process forward. It's a law on submitting amendments to the Constitution of Ukraine regarding justice. There are a number of key points in the law. The Constitutional Court has become more accessible to ordinary Ukrainians as a result. The Supreme Council of Justice will be replaced with the Supreme Council of Public Justice, and its mandate will increase. The new body will be able to suspend and dismiss judges. Ukraine Calling listeners will remember previous reports about corrupt judges being dismissed, but there is public pressure to investigate many more. Another important change is that some restrictions have been placed on the Prosecutor General. We'll bring you in-depth commentary about this law and its implications later in the show when I and my colleague from Democracy Reporting International and from the OSCE mission here will be discussing this. Ex-riot police officer has admitted guilt in court for his actions during the Euromaidan protest. Viktor Shapovalov was once a commander in the now disbanded Berkut Special Police Force. He now faces charges for his role during the Euromaidan protest for exceeding his authority. The court hearing was told that his unit from Kharkiv was responsible for assaulting 110 protesters. Shapovalov admitted that he watched the assaults and did nothing to stop them. He also admitted to seeing his colleagues receive lethal weapons that were used to shoot protesters, described the details of the special operation, and named names. Also interesting testimony was that he described how to identify Berkut members who were actually responsible for the killings by the markings on the backs of their helmets. Meanwhile, in Moscow, a Ukrainian journalist was detained by Russian service officers in Moscow on the 30th of September on charges of espionage. Roman Sushchenko is a journalist who works for the Ukrainian news agency Ukrinform. He's been their Paris correspondent since 2010 and was in Moscow during his vacation on private business. His wife, Anthelia, learned of the detention only 2 days after the fact. She and Ukrinform hired the Russian defense lawyer Mark Fagan, the man who defended Ukrainian pilot politician Nadia Savchenko when she was in a Russian prison. Fagan was allowed to meet with his new client for 15 minutes, during which time the journalist said he was innocent and ready to prove this in court. As far as the war is concerned, shelling continues in the war zone in the Donbas, but casualties were relatively low over the past week. Only one Ukrainian soldier was killed and five were wounded. Former dissident Ivan Juba received the Metropolitan Sheptytsky Award for 2016. The writer, former Soviet dissident and former Ukrainian Minister of Culture, was recognized for his bravery. The award is bestowed annually by the Jewish Confederation of Ukraine to an individual for her or his contributions to fostering Ukrainian-Jewish cooperation and understanding. 50 years ago, Juba was one of the few intellectuals who, together with Viktor Nekrasov, gathered in Babi Yar to remember Jewish victims massacred there. During the then Soviet era, the Holocaust and victimization of Jews was not publicly discussed. Among other things, Juba is internationally known for his book Internationalism or Russification, written in 1965, which protested against Soviet policies of Russifying Ukraine. A new movie will soon appear in Ukraine. It's called War Chimeras and is being filmed by a mother and daughter team, Maria and Anastasia Storozhitsky. It's a drama based on the real-life events surrounding the bloody and controversial August 2014 Battle of Ilovaisk. It includes phone recorded video footage shot by soldiers who were there and survived. Maria had published a book and a play about those events in 2015 and hopes to have the film ready for the Doku Days UAE International Film Festival in December. We'll post a link to the book on our webpage. And now, as a bridge to the next section, our discussion on legal reform, here's a bit of a gem, an old recording from 1988 by Andriy Panchishin of Lviv from the group Nezhuris singing Ya mayu pravo, I have a right.
Я маю право випити пиво і у відпустку жити красиво. Я маю право служити в війську і розмовляти по-українськи. Я такий щасливий, бо я маю право мати право. Я маю право мати право. Я маю право жити до смерті і в персональнім ліжку померти. Я такий щасливий, бо я маю право мати право. Ми такі щасливі, бо ми маємо право мати право. Всі такі щасливі, бо всі мають право мати право.
One of the key issues highlighted during the recent Euromaidan and Revolution of Dignity was the corrupt nature of the legal system in Ukraine, especially the judiciary, and that they had lost all credibility in the eyes of society. The struggle against corruption and to democratize the country through, inter alia, constitutional reforms and an overhaul of the legal system and judiciary have nevertheless proved difficult, and many would say are proceeding far too slowly. But at least as far as revamping the judiciary, there has recently been a breakthrough paving the way for change. A few days ago, on the 30th of September, a long-awaited reform of the judiciary, approved earlier in June by an overwhelming majority of MPs, took effect. Constitutional amendments and the newly adopted law on the judiciary and legal status of judges should contribute to the establishment of a credible and a professional judiciary by drastically reducing political interference in judicial matters, limiting immunities, introducing anti-corruption safeguards, as well as open competitive selection procedures for judges. The constitutional amendments are backed by European and international partners of Ukraine and should bring the country in line with European standards and values. To discuss these changes, their implications, and the challenges of implementing them, I'm very pleased to have with me here in the Hromadske Radio Studio two leading local experts, Andriy Kozlov, Senior Legal Analyst for Democracy International, therefore my colleague, and advisor-observer at the Constitutional Commission, and Oleksandr Vodyannikov, the National Legal Advisor to the OSCE Project Coordinator in Ukraine. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for the invitation.
Right. Let's begin by asking you to briefly explain to non-specialists what, in your view, is the significance of the recent constitutional changes. Andriy, would you go first?
Yes, probably there is a great demand for justice in this society, which was deprived it for a very long time. And, well, the reform is aiming to restore at least some feeling of justice in the country. And to do this, there are several ways, like depoliticization of the judiciary, fight against corruption, of course, corrupt judiciary is some reflection of the face of this of the whole society, of course, and also introducing some new legal instruments which are really interesting and may give a better opportunities for an ordinary people to defend their rights.
Oleksandr, and what would you say?
Well, thank you for inviting. And to start with, I'd like to point out that it's not the first attempt to reform judiciary here in Ukraine. And since Ukraine gained independence in early 90s, there was a huge problem with the judiciary here. For we have a Soviet-style judiciary inherited from the former Soviet Union. And as many of our audience remember, there was such a kind of institution as democratic centralism introduced by Stalin, which made judiciary completely dependent on the party structures and afterwards to the state institutions as such. Therefore, this particular reform that was introduced in June this year gives hope that we will somehow get rid of those Soviet-style heritage. First of all, many things in the constitution being introduced to ensure, indeed, as Andriy said, depoliticization, but also independence, independence of the judicial profession, which is the key problem here, because never before, maybe for a short period during the Orange Revolution, judiciary was in effect independent from political forces and from the government as such. This is the key idea behind the current reform, to have Europeanized post-Soviet judiciary independent and compliant with all European democratic standards. That's a challenge. Because the reform is not so straightforward, as I would rather say. There are some minor issues still to be overcome.
And we'll discuss that in a second. Don't jump ahead. So in essence, what you're saying is that it's aimed also at providing the right balance in a democratic society between the judiciary, executive, and legislature.
Exactly, exactly. And if, Andriy, you recollect, when we first gathered in the Constitutional Commission, we developed the terms of reference for the Constitutional Commission. I mean, not two of us, but the Commission as such. And the key priority was indeed to reallocate power between the so-called power triangle, between the president, judiciary, and the parliament, so that to ensure a viable and sustainable democratic development of this country, of course, not now expectations or our plans have been implemented, but still the breakthrough done in June this year gives us hope that the work will be continued.
And I'm right to recall that this is the first major change to the constitution here.
Not the first, because but this is the first change in the constitution that was impeccably procedurally validly done, I would rather say, because the major reform of 2004, which was a political compromise to solve the revolution, the Orange Revolution, was executed in quite suspicious in terms of dubious procedure way. This time, indeed, the parliament complied with all the requirements mandated by the constitution as concerns the constitutional amendment. And I would rather say this is the first precedent in Ukrainian history when such impeccable.
I would also note that public discussion was unprecedented, because so many experts and civil society activists were invited to have their say, to provide the Constitutional Commission with their version of the amendments. And some of these ideas were in fact implemented. And actually, in the very beginning, there were two different drafts which were amalgamated into the single one. And this one is relatively better than each one of those before.
Were you surprised that it was possible at this stage to get sufficient votes, a constitutional majority, if you want, to pass these amendments?
It's not just possible to torpedo every reform which is brought on the stage, and decentralization reform did not go through, so.
Far too controversial at this stage because of its connection with Eastern Ukraine, with the Donbas.
Yes, sure, but you cannot oppose every reform. But unfortunately, some reformist factions did not give a single vote for this reform. So this was quite strange, yet.
But these changes, they in the constitution and the legislation that is connected with them, affects primarily the judiciary. But when we talk about the prosecutor's office, for instance, and others, surely there are other changes that are pending that are connected to make this overhaul of the legal system viable and credible.
Well, that's not quite correct to say that the amendments affect only judiciary. The Constitutional Commission proposed the president to eradicate completely the chapter of the constitution devoted to the Prosecutor General's office.
And this was done.
And this was done, yes. Also, amendments concern such legal institutions as the bar, as the constitutional court, as we also introduced the constitutional complaint, a very important institution in the, for the first time in this country, and I hope that would enhance the human rights protection here. There are many, many bills being developed by the Judicial Reform Council. One of them already have been submitted to the parliament, I mean the bill on High Council of Justice. The second bill that will be submitted within the nearest days is the Constitutional Court bill that was to effectively reform the Constitutional Court and the Constitutional Court procedures. I think that would be a breakthrough in the reform as well. But also a number of procedural laws will be amended to affect constitutional changes, as well as new law on the prosecution is being developed. To complement the answer, I would rather point to the development of the High Anti-Corruption Court, which is also a very interesting part of the reform that would also entail a review of legislation concerning investigations. Concerning other procedures, and I hope that that will be completed by the end of the year. And also, Andriy perhaps would also complement with the those things that should be done on purging the judiciary and selection of the new corpus of the judiciary.
Don't forget about the law on the bar, where there are many problems.
Okay, well, this all sounds very encouraging, and of course, only to be welcome, but. What is the reality, Andriy? How ready is the legal profession or the judiciary for this? And is there the political will to both of you, is my question. Do you sense that the political will is there to actually push through, persevere, and to make sure that these changes are effected?
Well, every system tends to stability, of course, whatever the stability is, even if it's something very bad. So the thing is, there is, of course, some signs from the side of judiciary that they are being suppressed. Of course, there is an inner opposition in the judiciary, especially.
There's resistance. Some of them are losing their jobs, their money, the influence that they had.
There is a resistance which is mostly visible in, for example, High Administrative Court, I would say. But, well... And of course, legal professionals and civil society for so many years have been following the lifestyle which was, let's say, comparable with corrupt judiciary and which was feeding the corrupt judiciary. Unfortunately, it was so. And probably there will be some circles of, well, resurrection of bad practices even in the new system. But still, we hope that since there is a reform, of course, it's not an ending point. It's just the beginning. But it means that there is a political will. And even if something is not being done right now, it would be possible to change after all, because the framework of the constitutional changes is such that it allows to make further better changes. But so many things will depend on how the assessment procedures and open cost contests will go.
Because, so do you feel that there's going to be a lot of resistance from the old guard within the judiciary bringing in new people, new professional people with, say, higher ethical standards?
You know what? One of the problems was that actually only professional values were measured during those contests before, and those professional values were not limited, but mostly relied on good memory. You know codes well, you know some laws well, you remember them, and you just reproduce. You are not even creative. But now there are attempts which I hope will succeed. To introduce some general achievement tests or psychological tests which will help to find proper people from the very beginning. And compared with professional knowledge, this will help to have a better quality of the judiciary. At least we hope so.
Alexander, what practical problems could there be in the implementation? If we're getting rid, illustrating, if you want, some of the older guard that proved themselves to be simply in the pay of the politicians, And before we are able to find the younger, the newer blood to fill their place, is there going to be a gap? Is the system not in danger of collapsing in the meantime?
Yes, you're perfectly right. We are, you know, a few weeks ago, I have a thought to write an article to one weekly here in Ukraine entitled Anticipating Collapse. Specifically devoted to the current issues, because as far as I see here in Kyiv, many people in the civil society, in the governmental authorities, are more preoccupied with selecting judges to the Supreme Court, but paying little attention on what is going on in the first instance court. And there, the situation is there, because there are already a number of district courts that are not operable completely. Therefore, the situation with the judiciary is such is that lies not in the fact that the judiciary is now somehow sabotaging or protesting or opposing the reform. Those who are opposing have already resigned. Right now, half, maybe less than half of the judiciary have been resigned.
Could you just explain for our listeners, how has this worked? As I understand it, judges have been given the option of coming clean with their record, with their earnings, or resigning.
Up until now, until the reform enters into force on the 30th of September, judges have only one opportunity, just to resign, because the option either to go to the competition or resign is given during the implementation of reforms that have been effectuated only recently. Therefore, many judges, even before the reform was put into effect, decided to leave the bar or the judicial system. Therefore, there are many vacancies right now in the judiciary that I hope will be filled in by the so-called new blood. Now, whether it happens, I don't know, frankly speaking. It's quite difficult to anticipate what would be the reaction of the society and the bar on the offer from the government to go to the court and serve as judges. Because one thing is to serve in the Supreme Court, and another thing is to serve in district court with all the problems and issues pertaining to the first instance jurisdiction here.
Okay, well, we know that a primary reason why in recent years or in the last decade or two people went into the judiciary was because it was a source of wealth, money, of becoming rich quickly without any particular limits. In the new system that's being created, are there some sort of parameters for earnings, or what will make it attractive for younger people other than status, prestige, I guess, to go into that profession?
Well, status, prestige, good wages, remuneration.
The remuneration will still be good, decent, corruption?
At least for higher courts, it will be decent. Unfortunately, for lower courts, it will be not that good to attract people to serve somewhere in, far away regions of the country. I'm afraid so, especially because also there is not so much cultural life in there, and probably it will be hard for a person from some big and vivid city to go into some semi-rural areas, with all due respect to rural areas, of course, but this is the truth. We cannot make people change their lifestyle so drastically. But probably there will be some, pioneers, enthusiasts, who would like to try at least and give an example. And if this is a positive example, and the person is, being loved by all the community around for his honesty and for his other virtues, why not? Probably this will put a new, standard.
Well, let me put a slightly different spin on this discussion. We focused on what's in it for the country, the system, the judges themselves. Now, for the ordinary citizen, what positive changes other than greater belief in the system could it bring? Will it bring better opportunities to somehow influence the workings of the system, to monitor the workings of the system? What can they realistically expect at the end of the road if the implementation is successful? Alexander?
I think that it takes years for the ordinary population to feel the results of the reform. For me, the indicator would be the number of appeals to the Strasbourg court, whether it would diminish or not. If not, then it is the indication of failure. If yes, then...
What's the Strasbourg court for our North American listeners?
Well, it's European Human Rights Court that receives appeals on human rights violations from the member states of the Council of Europe, and Ukraine is member of the Council of Europe and participates state of the Strasbourg court since 1997 and leads the records of appeals from citizens to this international judicial institution.
Well, may I add something? Of course, for those who care about the judiciary, who have a particular concern in it, there will be some tremendous opportunities, for example, to fight the corruption yourself, because, there is a ground for dismissal of a judge, such as failure to explain the legality of the assets, and not only his personal assets, but also assets of his relatives and other connected people. So, if you see a judge driving a Maybach, unless you know he inherited it from his German grand-grandmother,
or American,
so go to the High Council of Justice and, well, file a complaint. And there will be a disciplinary proceeding, and, well, probably this judge will be fired. And many other cases will lead to the same scene. And also, I would say so, that besides general trust, I hope that the decisions themselves will be written much more clearer, and people will understand why the judge decided so. Because, as I said, there will be some sort of JAT test, which would include an ability to express himself. Because sometimes it's just, well, judicial mumbling, and people just do not understand it.
Gentlemen, we are coming to the end of our very interesting discussion. In two words or more, maybe even three, do you remain optimistic given that this implementation process is not an easy one and it's fraught with political and other considerations? Looking down the road 2 or 3 years, will we get there? Alexander?
Thank you for the question. I'm optimistic in this respect. Indeed, the pace of the reform is quite difficult one here. There is no black and white, or rather say it's 60 shades of gray. But as far as I see, there is a strong political consensus on the Pechersk Hills, as well as in the society, that reform is needed, that reform should be done in this or that way. There are some disputes as to ways of its implementation, but there is no dispute of rolling it back. And that gives hope.
Andriy?
Probably it cannot be completely swift, but it should be decisive. And yes, I'm optimistic, because otherwise I would quit doing anything in this direction.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. You've been listening to leading local legal experts, Andriy Kozlov, Senior Legal Analyst for Democracy International, for DRI, Democracy Reporting International, and Advisor Observer at the Constitutional Commission, and Alexander Vodyanikov, National Legal Advisor to the OSCE Project Coordinating Ukraine. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And looking forward, we will continue to watch all the stories in Ukraine. Tune in next weekend for a new episode of Ukraine Calling. If you have any suggestions or comments, please write to the show at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I'm Bohdan Nahailo in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.
Як сон без кінця, пірнаю у простір тіні, день без думок. Світ без людей здається близьким, як стіни, ми не самі. Ховаємо в сором очі, хочемо втекти, зірватися вниз від себе, втратити зміст, а форму лишити, може й знову знайти. Хоч трохи землі і неба, ми не самі, вмираємо для себе кожен, для себе.
Може, підійдеш і візьмеш в долоні, може, застигнеш, не в змозі забути.